Next day, the trumpets rang early in the camp. About midday, the banners of the forest and the lake were seen to be borne forth again. A company of 20 was approaching the dwarves' camp. At the beginning of the narrow way, they laid aside sword and spear and came on towards the gate. Wondering, the dwarves saw that among them were both Bard and the Elven King, before whom an old man wrapped in cloak and hood bore a strong casket of iron-bound wood.
"Hail, Thorin," said Bard. "Are you still of the same mind?"
"My mind has not changed with the rising and setting of a few suns. Did you come to ask me idle questions? The elf host has not departed. Till then you come in vain to bargain with me. Is there nothing for which you would yield any of your gold?
Nothing that you or your friends have to offer.
What of the Arkenstone of Thrain?"
At the same moment, the old man opened the casket and held aloft the jewel. The light leapt from his hand, bright and white in the morning. Then Thorin was stricken dumb with amazement and confusion. No one spoke for a long while. Thorin at length broke the silence. "That stone was my father's and is mine," he said. "Why should I purchase my own?
But how came you by the heirloom of my house, if there is any need to ask such a question of thieves?"
"We are not thieves," Bard answered. "Your own we will give back in return for our own."
"How came you by it?" shouted Thorin.
"I gave it to them," squeaked Bilbo.
"You! You!" cried Thorin. "You miserable hobbit! You undersized burglar!" And he shook poor Bilbo like a rabbit. "By the beard of Durin, I wish I had Gandalf here. Curse him for the choice of you. May his beard wither. As for you, I will throw you to the rocks."
And he lifted Bilbo in his arms.
"Stay.
Your wish is granted," said a voice.
The old man with the casket threw aside his hood and cloak.
"Here is Gandalf, and none too soon, it seems. If you don't like my burglar, please don't damage him. Put him down, and listen first to what he has to say."
"Never again will I have dealings with any wizard or his friends. What have you to say, you descendant of rats?"
Dear me," said Bilbo. "You may remember saying that I might choose my 14th share. The time was, all the same, when you seemed to think that I had been of some service. Take it that I have disposed of my share as I wished, and let it go at that."
"I will," said Thorin grimly. "And I will let you go at that. And may we never meet again. I am betrayed. It was rightly guessed that I could not forbear to redeem the Arkenstone, the treasure of my house. For it I will give 1/14th share of the hoard in silver and gold, setting aside the gems. But that shall be accounted the promised share of this traitor. Get down now to your friends," he said to Bilbo, "or I will throw you down."
"What about the gold and silver?" asked Bilbo.
"That shall follow after, as can be arranged," said Thorin. "Get down."
"Until then, we keep the stone," cried Bard.
"You are not making a very splendid figure as king under the mountain," said Gandalf. "But things may change yet."
And so Bilbo was swung down from the wall and departed with nothing for all his trouble except the armor which Thorin had given him already. More than one of the dwarves in their hearts felt shame and pity at his going.
"Farewell,"
he cried to them.
"May we meet again as friends."
"Be off. If you do not hasten, I will sting your miserable feet. So be swift."
"Not so hasty," said Bard. "We will give you until tomorrow. At noon we will return and see if you have brought from the hoard the portion that is to be set against the stone. If that is done without deceit, then we will depart, and the elf host will go back to the forest. In the meantime, farewell."
The next day the wind shifted west, and the air was dark and gloomy.
The morning was still early when a cry was heard in the camp. Runners came in to report that Dane had come. He had hurried on through the night, and so had come upon them sooner than they had expected. Each of his folk was clad in a hauberk of steel mail that hung to his knees, and his legs were covered with hose of a fine and flexible metal mesh. The dwarves were exceedingly strong for their height, but most of these were strong even for dwarves. In battle, they wielded heavy two-handed mattocks, and their faces were grim. Trumpets called men and elves to arms. Before long, the dwarves could be seen coming up the valley at a great pace. Bard went out to meet them, and with him went Bilbo.
"We are sent from Dane, son of Nain," they said when questioned. "We are hastening to our kinsmen in the mountain. But who are you that sit in the plain as foes before defended walls?"
Bard refused to allow the dwarves to go straight onto the mountain. He was determined to wait until the gold and silver had been brought out in exchange for the Arkenstone, for he did not believe that this would be done if once the fortress was manned with so large and warlike a company. They could stand a siege for weeks, and by that time yet more dwarves might come, and yet more, for Thorin had many relatives. These were, in fact, precisely their plans, but for the moment the way was barred. Bard then sent messengers at once to the gate, but they found no gold or payment. Arrows came forth, and they hastened back in dismay. In the camp, all was now astir, as if for battle, for the dwarves of Dane were advancing.
"Fools," laughed Bard, "to come thus beneath the mountain's arm. They do not understand war above ground, whatever they may know of battle in the mines. There are many of our archers and spearmen now hidden in the rocks upon their right flank. Let us set on them now from both sides before they are fully rested."
But the elven king said, "Long will I tarry, ere I begin this war for gold. Let us hope still for something that will bring reconciliation." But he reckoned without the dwarves. The knowledge that the Arkenstone was in the hands of the besiegers burned in their thoughts. Suddenly, without a signal, they sprang forward to attack. Bows twanged and arrows whistled. Battle was about to be joined. Still more suddenly, a darkness came on with dreadful swiftness. Winter thunder and a wild wind rolled roaring up and rumbled in the mountain. And beneath the thunder, another blackness could be seen whirling forward. But it did not come with the wind. It came from the north, like a vast cloud of birds, so dense that no light could be seen between their wings. Then, in a voice like the thunder itself, his staff blazing forth with a flash like the lightning, Gandalf cried out, "Halt! Dread has come upon you all. The goblins are upon you, O Dane. Bolg of the North, whose father you slew in Moriah, is coming. The bats above his army are like a sea of locusts. They ride upon wolves, and wargs are in their train. Come, there is time yet for counsel. Let Dane, son of Nain, come swiftly to us."
So began the battle of the five armies, and it was very terrible. Upon one side were the goblins and the wild wolves, and upon the other were elves and men and dwarves. Ever since the fall of the great goblin of the Misty Mountains, the hatred of their race for the dwarves had been rekindled to fury. Not even the ravens knew of their coming until they came out of the broken lands which divided the lonely mountain from the hills behind. How much Gandalf knew cannot be said, but it is plain that he had not expected this sudden assault. This is the plan he made in council with the elven king and with Bard and with Dane, for the goblins were the foes of all, and at their coming all other quarrels were forgotten. Their only hope was to lure the goblins into the valley between the arms of the mountain and themselves to man the great spurs that struck south and east. Yet this would be perilous if the goblins were in sufficient numbers to overrun the mountain itself and so attack them from behind and above. But there was no time to make any other plan or to summon any help.
"To the mountain!" called Bard. "To the mountain! Let us take our places while there is yet time!"
Ere long, the vanguard swirled round the spur's end and came rushing into Dale. These were the swiftest wolf riders, and already their cries and howls rent the air afar. As Gandalf had hoped, the goblin army had gathered behind the resisted vanguard and poured now in rage into the valley, driving wildly up between the arms of the mountain, seeking for the foe. It was a terrible battle, the most dreadful of all Bilbo's experiences, and the one which at the time he hated most,
although he was quite unimportant in it. Actually, I may say, he put on his ring early in the business and vanished from sight, if not from all danger.
The elves were the first to charge. As soon as the host of their enemies was dense in the valley, they sent against it a shower of arrows. Behind the arrows, 1,000 of their spearmen leapt down and charged. Just as the goblins were recovering from the onslaught and the elf charge was halted, there rose from across the valley a deep-throated roar. With cries of Moriah and Dane, Dane, the dwarves of the Iron Hills plunged in, and beside them came the men of the lake with long swords. Panic came upon the goblins, and even as they turned to meet this new attack, the elves charged again with renewed numbers. Victory seemed at hand, when a cry rang out on the heights above. Goblins had scaled the mountain from the other side, and already many were on the slopes above the gate, and others were streaming down recklessly to attack the spurs from above, and the defenders had too few to bar the way for long. Victory now vanished from hope. They had only stemmed the first onslaught of the Black Tide. Day drew on. The goblins gathered again in the valley. There a host of wargs came ravening, and with them came the bodyguard of Bolg, goblins of huge size, with scimitars of steel. Now Bard was fighting to defend the eastern spur, and yet giving slowly back. And the elf lords were at bay about their king upon the southern arm, near to the watchpost on Raven Hill. Suddenly there was a great shout, and from the gate came a trumpet call. They had forgotten Thorin. Out leapt the king under the mountain, and his companions followed him. They were in shining armor, and red light leapt from their eyes. Rocks were hurled down from on high by the goblins above, but they held on, leapt down to the fall's foot, and rushed forward to battle. Wolf and rider fell or fled before them. Thorin wielded his axe with mighty strokes, and nothing seemed to harm him. To me, elves and men, to me, oh, my kinsfolk, he cried. Down, heedless of order, rushed all the dwarves of Dane to his help. Down, too, came many of the lake men, for Bard could not restrain them. The wargs were scattered, and Thorin drove right against the bodyguard of Bolg. But he could not pierce their ranks. His numbers were too few. Soon the attackers were attacked, facing every way, hemmed all about with goblins and wolves returning to the assault. The bodyguard of Bolg came howling against them and drove in upon their ranks like waves upon cliffs of sand. The assault from the mountain was renewed with redoubled force, and upon either side men and elves were being slowly beaten down. On all this Bilbo looked with misery.
It will not be long now before the goblins win the gate, and we are all slaughtered or driven down and captured. I would rather old Smaug had been left with all the wretched treasure than that these vile creatures should get it and all of us come to a bad end. Misery me. I wish I was well out of it.
The clouds were torn by the wind, and a red sunset slashed the west. Seeing the sudden gleam in the gloom, Bilbo looked round. He gave a great cry. He had seen a sight that made his heart leap. Dark shapes, small yet majestic against the distant glow.
"The eagles! The eagles!" he shouted. "The eagles are coming! The eagles! The eagles!"
Bilbo cried, dancing and waving his arms. If the elves could not see him, they could hear him. Soon they took up the cry, and it echoed across the valley. Many wondering eyes looked up, though as yet nothing could be seen except from the southern shoulders of the mountain.
"The eagles!"
cried Bilbo once more, but at that moment a stone hurtling from above smote heavily on his helm, and he fell with a crash and knew no more.